Support comes from the St. Louis Chamber Chorus. Season 68 concludes at John Burroughs at 3 p.m. on May 26th with the United Nations commissioned Voices of Today by composer Benjamin Britten, featuring youth and adult singers. Tickets at chamberchorus.org.
This is St. Louis on the Air from St. Louis Public Radio. I'm Elaine Cha. Last spring, Missouri's Attorney General Andrew Bailey asked Missourians to help him with an unusual and specific project. On March 23, 2023, he announced the creation of a public tip line. Its goal? To collect complaints about doctors and institutions providing gender-affirming care. Bailey announced the program as, quote, an effort to protect children. To do that, he wanted the public to play the role of informer. 1 month later, the tip line was shut down. Bailey's office claimed it had been hacked. But last week, St. Louis Public Radio obtained thousands of pages of responses to the tip line. Acquired through a Sunshine request, the emails provide a window into the impact of Bailey's efforts and how Missourians responded to his claims about trans people and their medical care. Here to talk about the tip line and what it can tell us a year later, I'm joined by St. Louis on the Air producer Danny Wisentusky. Danny, welcome.
It's great to be here.
So the tip line went up on March 23rd, 2023. What did it ask for?
You know, the tip line itself asked people to send in any complaints or concerns about these transgender care centers giving gender-affirming care. I will say that Andrew Bailey, in his own statements, kind of went a bit further. It wasn't just complaints or concerns. He wanted to hear people who witnessed troubling practices. He talked about credible accusations of child abuses. And he really put this in the framework of protecting children. So this wasn't just, you know, like a consumer protection thing, but there was something much more serious happening. And he wanted to hear essentially evidence of child abuse.
Mm-hmm. And so the justifications that he gave, I mean, was there anything very specific that he said that that elicited a particular response?
You know, what was happening, you know, in this moment, you know, what he was, excuse me, you know, this credible accusation that he referenced, it was connected to a specific whistleblower. She was a former case manager at the gender clinic. This was run by Washington University. Her name was Jamie Reed, and we've talked with her about her on the show before. She made a very specific accusation about what she was seeing in that clinic. And she overall said that, you know, basically kids and parents were being convinced to transition. They weren't being told to get mental health treatment. They were being either, you know, some level of coercion or negligence. But he was going off of this particular complaint from Jamie Reed, and that came out in February, just a couple weeks before he announced this tip line in March of 2023.
Mm-hmm. So your Sunshine request, why did you make it? And what is it that you were looking for, Danny?
You know, I made it for a couple reasons. One is that this is an unusual thing for an attorney general to do. We don't often see you know, outside of things like consumer protection, you have a contractor who's scamming you, you have a business that is not providing its services, you will make a complaint to the attorney general. He has a lot of forms there for different industries. But this was something different. Andrew Bailey came out very publicly against, I guess, the notion of trans people getting care and especially children getting care. Mm-hmm. And Jamie Reed's affidavit, she submitted that to Andrew Bailey before going public in a long column published by the Free Press. But this began, you know, notionally as an investigation of her claims. Andrew Bailey did not wait for that investigation of her claims. He was saying, you know, we've got this credible, but I want more evidence. Mm-hmm. You know, send it to me. And he was very broad with that request.
So the request itself, you made that on April 21st, 2023. So that was just over a year ago. And as we noted in the introduction, you received the records last week. So what were your initial thoughts?
Yeah, you know, a year is a long time to wait for this kind of records. And to your point, you know, to your question before, why did I want to see this? This is kind of a window into how Missourians think about trans people and think about the idea of gender-affirming care and that kids are accessing this care and their parents are taking them to it. I think if you listen to a lot of Republican politicians and folks like Andrew Bailey, they frame it in very specific kind of terms. This is a kind of child abuse. This is robbing children of their childhood. This is permanent harm. That was one of the things Jamie Reed claimed, is that we, you know, the people in that clinic that she worked along with, are permanently harming these vulnerable patients. And that is just not the way that these families and kids talk about this care. And so there's this tension and a disconnect between the way Andrew Bailey, our chief law enforcement officer, is talking, and the way that doctors and families and kids are. And I thought, you know, this might be a way to see, you know, is there a connection here? Will people respond to Andrew Bailey's call? Will he get the evidence he's looking for? Do Missouris believe him when he describes this system of medical care that way? And so I wanted to see what it would look like.
So tell me about how many emails you got to see and what time that they covered.
So I requested the first 48 hours of responses only. And I did that for a couple of reasons. I thought it would be a more manageable sunshine request. And here I am a year later. I thought so that was didn't really seem to make a difference. We received 3,714 pages of records in response to my request. That's a lot to come in 48 hours. I think we will talk about why those numbers, you know, are a little misleading, and they don't tell the full story. Mm-hmm. But there were hundreds of email responses that were in those thousands of pages. There were parents, there were kids, there were some people who identified as doctors. There were a lot of people who just responded to Andrew Bailey to insult him. Oh,
so this tip line then, it did ask people to report troubling practices, including examples of abuse and harm from gender-affirming care. Did he get what he was looking for, Danny?
Based on the responses that we've gotten in this sample, he did not. The vast majority of these messages are telling him how off base he is in language that I cannot repeat on the radio. A lot of them were accounts of how gender-affirming care had helped their own lives or the lives of their children. There were I'm talking about like 2 to 3 responses that, you know, were critical of gender-affirming care. There was one case of a person who said they did receive bad care at this particular gender clinic. They said it was a case of bad informed consent. I did reach out to this person to try to understand what had happened, but I did not hear back. But that single email is the only one in all of these thousands of pages that even gets close to what Andrew Bailey was looking for.
Mm-hmm. And that's, again, 48 hours of that tip line being open.
Yeah, they received a lot of messages, but that tip line was open for longer. But, you know, this is the sample that we were able to get and which the Attorney General's office provided to us.
Mm-hmm. Now, one of the responses that was received was from Becky Hormuth. She's the mom of a 17-year-old son who is trans. And she told us that the tip line terrified her.
I was afraid of it, not just for our family and my child in general, but for all transgender individuals in Missouri. I felt like it was a hunt to find or get evidence of something that was unfounded. And that's why I ended up putting out my initial response to the tip line and basically telling Andrew Bailey that what he is doing is harmful. It's harming my family. It's actually impeding on my rights, my husband's rights, in order to parent our child in the way that we feel is best. And in the end, it's going to be very, very detrimental to a lot of people, not just my family and my kiddo, but a lot of others that could be affected. And I don't feel like that he intentionally, or the people in his office that were helping navigate through that tip line, were conscientious, nor did they care.
That was Becky Hormuth talking about her decision to reply to Andrew Bailey's trans tip line. The point that Becky made about the hunt for evidence and feeling targeted by this tip line, is that something that you saw in other replies, Danny?
I did. And several of the parents kind of pointed out that the reality of what it is to get this care is not something that Andrew Bailey seems at all interested in. There was one person who said they had a trans family member who has been getting that care, and their mental health changed so greatly for the positive when they got that care, and that this has hurt no one. A trans person said they received excellent care from the Washington University Transgender Healthcare Program, but politicians who know nothing about that care or their transgender health needs have decided to throw the full force of government to stop that care. Several people talked about wanting to go to that clinic and having to suddenly try to figure out something else because this tip line, this process did really have an impact on gender-affirming care, as we'll talk about.
Mm-hmm. We're talking today about a controversial tip line created last year by Missouri Attorney General Andrew Bailey. The tip line asked the public to submit complaints about transgender medical care. Now, this tip line received thousands of pages of replies, and St. Louis on the Air producer Danny Wisentowski has been reviewing those documents. So we did say earlier, and let's put dates on this, the tip line did not last long. It went live on March 23rd and then offline on April 21st. What happened?
So in a way, Andrew Bailey got exactly, what he was asking for. He got attention to this, and he received a lot of responses. And at some point, it goes down, and his office says that it had been hacked, essentially. And trying to figure out what hacked means in this case is a little difficult. But one of his spokespersons said, rather than standing by their supposed science to back up their facts, they're resorting to try to hack our system to silence victims of the exact network we're attempting to expose. And that statement has a lot in there, but it shows, I think, the office's perspective on gender-affirming care, this mm-hmm. supposed science. They do not respect it. They do not listen, the voices of medical providers, parents. That is not who Andrew Bailey is listening to on this point. And the other point that is brought up in that explanation, the notion that there are multiple victims, that is not something that Andrew Bailey has produced. As we mentioned, Jamie Reed made these accusations. But when dozens and dozens of parents spoke to newspapers, both to us, to the Post-Dispatch, to the Missouri Independent, to the NBC, to New York Times, they could not find someone who could say, we were not given the right information. We were pushed into transitioning. In fact, many of them, including parents I've talked to, said that they were given greater barriers. Becky Hormuth, who we just heard from, when mm-hmm. she called the gender clinic, the person who picked up the phone was Jamie Reed. And Jamie Reed told Becky Hormuth that they would have to wait another year for her son to get mental health care. So there's a great deal of contrast, but the notion that there are now multiple victims who are backing up Jamie Reed or that Andrew Bailey's claims have been affirmed, he didn't get that. Mm-hmm. And what he did get, to the point about what happened to this tip line, was it hacked, is he did get a lot of responses that I think were designed to jam it up. Mm-hmm. There were some troll-like responses. It looked like someone may have created kind of an automated piece of software. There were sort of 10 or so very similar uh-huh. responses. One of the other really interesting things is that people kind of had a sense that this was happening. And there were several news reports after the tip line went up that referenced how activists were trying to actively clog the tip line. And one of those, which was kind of a viral cause, was shared on social media. And for instance, there was this TikTok from April 17th.
Oh my god, y'all are not gonna believe this. I meant to copy and paste the B-movie script so I could text it to my bestie Miranda. Instead, I accidentally pasted it, then submitted it to Attorney General Andrew Bailey's Transgender Center Concern box. Oh my god, I'm so silly. I sure hope nobody else makes the same mistake that I did.
Right. And that was one of the TikToks. And I should say, one of the records I got was a 2,800-page email that began with the script to the B-movie and went in many, many directions, including, I think, some erotic novel type stuff. But one could say this was an effort to intentionally jam this service up. Mm-hmm. Is that hacking? I don't know.
Yeah. What does that say about the tip line itself? I mean, did that change how you looked at the emails that you obtained?
It's kind of humorous to hear the B-movie is a meme and it's been used in a lot of other formats as a kind of way to mess up an internet form or to let people know that you're not taking them seriously. But I think trans people saw this tip line, I think as Becky Hormuth said, as a hunt for evidence that would affect their lives. Mm-hmm. There was a lot of fear and the notion that this was you know, Andrew Bailey, you know, taking an objective look at what is the status of gender-affirming care, his kind of statement showed where his mindset and perspective is on this.
Right.
And so I think a lot of trans people saw this as, what can we do? You know, this service is only going to be used to harass and surveil us. Is it? It's perhaps tactical and moral to make it as the least useful to Andrew Bailey as possible. And one thing that comes to mind is one of the reasons I wanted to see this is not long ago in 2021, Eric Schmidt made a somewhat similar call for a public tip line. And this was for parents who were reporting their schools were still enforcing mask mandates. And that was a very different scenario. I also got the first 2 days of responses. And that was another 8,000 pages of emails that I was reading through. And Missourians responded very differently. Mm-hmm. They reported the names of teachers. They called the police on people. They interpreted this call from the Attorney General and what, you know, Eric Schmidt was saying at the time as the force of law. And in these responses, at least, and certainly in things like the B movie showing up, a lot of people did not take that seriously.
It's interesting. Juxtaposition. Now, that tip line was taken down April 21st. A lot happened in the aftermath. Tell us about that, Danny.
All right. There was a lot that happened because Andrew Bailey released this tip line in the midst of his own very public statements and campaigns about transgender care. And so he released an emergency rule that would have restricted transgender care for both adults and minors. This created a great deal of panic. And we talked to a lot of folks last year, including on the show, about what that was. That, however, you know, the Missouri legislature passed their own ban on gender-affirming care, mm-hmm. and Andrew Bailey then said that he would pull back, he would no longer do his rule because the legislature had moved in. This was a complicated scenario, and for a bit, it seemed like people who were getting gender-affirming care already, they would be grandfathered in. So the new Missouri ban, it would mean that no more kids could get that kind of care at the Washington University Clinic, but people who had already gotten there, they were going to be safe. Mm-hmm. But that was not the case because only a few weeks later in the months, two different gender-affirming care clinics, Washington University and another one, announced that this law created such legal and danger for their doctors who could be held accountable. All of these new requirements that were often not well spelled out, and that ambiguity would put the doctors in legal danger. So what you actually ended up happening is that Missouri effectively eliminated gender-affirming care for kids, for adults who had been using this clinic, and it really changed the landscape and really caused a great deal of anguish.
Yeah. And just to put a clarifying point on kids, we're talking about minors.
Yeah.
Right. So this is a range of ages that goes up to 17 before mm-hmm. before they become adults. Now, we heard earlier from Becky Hormuth, again, mom of a trans child, and the response that she gave to Andrew Bailey's tip line was to say that her son had not been abused, was not harmed by the care he received at the gender clinic run by Washington University. Now, Danny, you had a chance to talk with Becky's son, Levi, about that clinic and what it felt like to learn that the clinic was closing its doors to trans patients.
I was a patient with them. I've been a patient with them like almost my whole life. And it really hurt to be pushed away by the corporation that I trusted the most with my health, my care, everything, just because they were afraid of something awful. Everybody in that clinic felt like a part of our family. They each felt like related to us in a way just because of how they've like helped us so much through this process and like give us each step we needed, all of the resources we needed, the contacts that we needed, and eventually through all of the, yes, I'm sure I want to do this, yes, no, I don't want to freeze my eggs, blah, 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 we finally were able to get the testosterone prescribed, and then that bill passed.
That was Levi Hormuth talking about his experience at the Washington University Transgender Center at St. Louis Children's Hospital. The family care and the use of we really stands out in that audio. Now, it has been a year since WashU closed its clinic. Danny, how is Levi doing now? Is he getting care somewhere else?
You know what? He is. And his parents made the decision to get him care in Illinois. And, you know, there are other families who have done the same thing. I should mention, he seems like, you know, he's very aware. He's fearful of what's happening in Missouri, but this has changed his life. He, like others, have said that this gender-affirming care saved his life. That is not a rare thing to hear. And I should say that I did reach out to the office of Andrew Bailey to try to understand how is he using these responses? What is the next step? How many responses did he get in total? I received no response, unfortunately, though these documents and records did come from that office officially.
Mm-hmm. And so what is it that the Attorney General's office is saying about this now?
You know, he is continuing to investigate the clinic. He has, I think earlier this year, talked about trying to get records from Washington University. He is defending the state of, you know, that ban, the legislation that was passed as the Attorney General in that role. He's defending that ban against a lawsuit from two trans minors who are suing, saying you're discriminating on the basis of sex. This is unconstitutional. And so he is still standing by this. But this tip line, which he really put a lot of public impact into, has really kind of faded away. And if not for getting these records a year later, he may have just allowed them to.
Mm-hmm. So from this point, I mean, we have on the show and together, we've talked with very young trans folks, right, with kids, with their parents. And insofar as the way things look now, folks like Becky Hormuth or like Levi, I mean, what is it that they're thinking about for the future? Did you get any indication of that as you were speaking with them?
I think there's so much frustration at politicians or officials like Andrew Bailey who just won't look at them as families and people who have made these decisions with great care and great effort and time spent. And I think they feel used by this, but also ignored. And it's a very painful kind of tension to have a target put on your back, but also to have the people in power so uninterested in what your life is actually like.
This episode was produced by Danny Wisentowski.
Audio engineering and podcast design by Aaron Dorr.
Our executive producer is Alex Hoyer.
St. Louis on the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio. Understanding starts here.
Do you find yourself regularly listening to episodes of St. Louis on the Air? Suggest us to a friend you think might enjoy our conversations. And leave us a review and rating on Apple Podcasts on the App Store. It's the simplest way to help people discover our show. Thank you.
St. Louis Public Radio is a member-supported service of the University of Missouri St. Louis.
The Gateway brings you the day's news from the St. Louis region and across Missouri. It also includes stories from the Illinois side of the river and our Metro East reporter, Will Bauer.
In Alton, in Belleville, in East St. Louis, in Edwardsville, in Cahokia Heights, at Scott Air Force Base, I'm Will Bauer, St. Louis Public Radio.
Listen to reports from Will and all of our journalists weekdays on the Gateway, on the STLPR app, and wherever you get podcasts.